Hi, I'm Rob Pritchard and I'm the sports editor at Manx Radio. The countdown to TT 2026 continues, and in this episode of the Manx Radio Sportscast, I've been speaking with someone who's at the very heart of all the key decisions at the racing fortnight. Alavan TT clerk of the course Gary Thompson is entering his 14th year in the role this year. In 2025, he and his team faced multiple challenges throughout the 2 weeks as weather regularly disrupted the meeting, culminating in Mr. Thompson having to cancel the iconic senior race due to poor conditions. Only the second time in the event's history that's happened, with the other in 2012 also under his watch. Outside of that, there's also changes this year for organisers to get their head around, including to the schedule as well as a couple of the race classes. Ahead of what is expected to be another busy year, I spoke with Mr. Thompson to get his views on the challenges, the changes and the preparations for this year's event.
Everything's been going really well, actually. We work very closely with the Department of Infrastructure. There's been some extensive resurfacing across the TT course. Obviously, we had some storm damage throughout the winter, so we've done some significant resurfacing in areas such as the Exeter Ballast Spur, Ginger Hall, Milltown, the Exeter Ramsey Hairpin up through Waterworks 1. We've done Waterworks 2, Guthrie's, Brandywell and Keppelgate through to Kate's Cottage. Other than those big areas, there are some other patchworks across the course as well. So the course is looking really good. Obviously, IDG, our course contractor, have been out putting all the rectocel, the lamppost protectors, all the course furniture. So that's been ongoing since mid-March. All the documentation's done, the event safety plan, the risk assessment, everything's been done. And is, we're now waiting for the Department of Infrastructure just to issue the race authorisation. So, it's been busy. It always is busy, but we're in a good place and we're good to go next week.
Like you mentioned there's quite a few areas that have undergone work in the year between the previous TT and now as well, or indeed the last few months, actually, in fact. So how are you going to go about communicating that? Well, first off, I imagine to the rider liaison officers, but also the competitors themselves, if there are quite a few things that they have to consider as changes to the course for this year.
Yeah, there is. We've already started doing that, actually. Last night I held two online rider briefings. I've got two more tonight. I've got another couple of online briefings next week. And then obviously, as the competitors get onto the island, we've got face-to-face briefings for those who haven't attended the online briefings next Saturday and Sunday, the 23rd and 24th of May. So, yeah, everything. We've got a good WhatsApp channel, riders, teams, competitors, WhatsApp channel. So lots of communication channels where we can get the messages out to them in good time before we start on the 25th of May.
And outside of the course changes, we've got machine changes. Come to that in a little bit. But in today's world, of course, we're seeing costs spiralling in a lot of areas. Have done over the last couple of years. We consider the world situation and some of the events that are happening elsewhere. How difficult, both from a financial and operational standpoint, is it for you as clerk of the course to run an event like the TT at the moment?
Obviously, I work very closely with the Department for Enterprise, the promoter for the event, and obviously I get an operational budget to organise the TT. Having said that, we are very mindful of the increase in costs. And although, I've never been asked to, cut my budget or whatever, obviously safety is of paramount importance, but I am realistic to know, that the costs are spiraling and increasing. So, we do what we have to do, but obviously I'm always mindful of the costs involved. But, we've any increases as for this year, we're continually developing and improving the digital red flag system, the rectocel. There's always improvements for that, and I've never been asked to cut the budget on that. The budget has always been there. Obviously, we all recognise the importance of safety on the TT course.
Just on that point, like you say, you've got a budget and you've not been asked to cut back, but given that margins can be tighter in a lot of areas of motorsport, does it mean that you have to prioritise certain things? And if so, what are the sort of things you have to prioritise?
Yeah, we do prioritise. There's never been a compromise. Safety's never been compromised, but safety for me, from my point of view, safety is always top of the list. So, whilst we're mindful of increased costs, safety is paramount of importance, and you know, we always treat that as the top priority.
Looking to the machines then, and of course there have been some changes this year. Of course, one of the notable ones is the introduction of the new look, what's being known as the sport bike class. So what was the Super Twin class sport bike machinery now coming in? For those who don't know, could you just explain why this switch is being made for 2026?
Well, we're still running the Super Twins alongside the sport bike class, but obviously as years have gone on, the Super Twin class has become quite expensive. So again, the sport bike class, it's road-based production machines. They're generally regarded as being very reliable. We've seen them run at on the short circuits, particularly at the British Superbikes. Again, they're fairly in motorbike sport terms. They're quite cheap too, or they're relatively cheap to run in comparison to Superbike, Superstock, and Super Sport. So it's a good class. It still produces fast, exciting racing, but it's more affordable than some of the other classes.
And just on that point, yes, Super Twin machines are still very much eligible for this year. But do you anticipate maybe in the short term, in the next few years, we could see more Super Twin machines disappearing effectively from the TT roster?
Yeah, that's something we're looking at. Obviously, you know, Super Twins are still popular, but we'll see how it goes at TT 2026 and then probably take a view following that. But obviously, we are aware of the sport bike class within British Superbikes. You know, everything's evolving all the time, so we'll take a view on that once TT 2026 is finished. But certainly for 2026, Super Twins are on the, are in the same class as sport bike, but we'll take a view on how that pans out after the event's finished.
And notable changes as well in the sidecar class. They're bringing in these restrictor plates, effectively restricting the airflow to engines. The idea of trying to make it a more competitive field as well. What do you hope in terms of, you know, I suppose narrowing the field, almost making it more competitive? How confident are you that it can achieve its purpose?
Yeah, I've been working really closely with Dave Molyneux on this. Obviously, Molly is vastly experienced, 40 years as a sidecar competitor, very, very successful, 19 wins under his belt. He's now part of the AC Events race organisation team as the sidecar liaison officer and technical advisor. And it was Molly who brought the restrictor plates to the table, really. And the idea behind the restrictor plates is to reduce engine power and top speeds. And in doing so, that should make the sidecars more stable. And the other thing as well is, obviously, last year we clearly saw the top three. There was a top three, and then the rest of the field. So it's hope that you know, with the reductions in engine speeds, we can try and bring some parity between outfits and make for closer racing. But the main thing really is to make the sidecars more stable, reducing the top speeds. That should be achievable.
And away from the mechanical side of things, I remember hearing comments made by one driver a couple of years ago about the fact that obviously replicas are awarded depending on how close you finish to the winning outfit as well, and maybe the gap in the field meant that more missed out on replicas than maybe there should be. So will this help maybe address that? Because these replicas mean a lot to these sidecar teams out there as well. Do you think that might help that particular situation, that they might get extra reward for their efforts if the field is closer together?
Yeah, there's obviously, yeah, we're aware of that, and obviously there's the silver replicas and the bronze replicas, and it's all dependent on the winning time of the first place outfit as it is for the solo. So, you know, bring the sidecar speeds down slightly, that should benefit those further down the field. But at the end of the day, you know, everybody enters. There's clearly going to be individual teams who are going to go faster. So everybody needs to accept that. You know, same with the solos. So, you know, we've got the top four in the solos. And yeah, that's not just at the TT. That's across all sports. You know, look at MotoGP, BSB. You know, there is the top runners, and then the field behind them.
And just before I move on as well, just quickly on top of that as well, this is a new thing for this year. These restrictor plates coming in, the changes to the sidecar class. You know, if it has the desired effect of making the field more competitive this year, do you anticipate that it could be a more long term thing for the class in the future?
Absolutely, yeah. No, the work we've been doing with Molly and we've been consulting with the sidecar teams throughout this process. It's something that we were doing all through the winter. The consultation process started last October, really. So we're working closely with the sidecar teams. What we want to do is preserve a sidecar class and actually try and get more teams onto the grid. Obviously, we've only got about 34, 35 this year, same as what we had last year. But the long-term ideal is to attract more teams to the sidecar class. The restrictor plates, not only should it reduce engine power and top speeds, but also in doing so, hopefully make the engines given more longevity, which will then further bring down the costs to the team. So it's something we're working with teams with. We've got a meeting with the teams on Monday, Monday the 1st of June. So the rest day at TT, or hopefully the rest day at TT, depending on the weather. And at that meeting, we're going to discuss what else we can do in the future to help preserve the sidecar class and attract more competitors to it.
Now, this wouldn't be a proper conversation between you and I without touching on the schedule, as we have done over the past couple of years. But last year, of course, there was a lot of disruption due to the weather, nothing that anyone could control. And of course, we lost the marquee senior race because of high winds and particularly the change of direction in the wind, if memory serves me correctly. So, I mean, just going back to that, how difficult a decision was that to make? Because it seemed from the riders that Radio TT was speaking to, for example, there was a real mix of views. Some wanted to go, some didn't.
Yeah, I heard that. I mean, to be honest, I mean, last year was a really difficult event. I mean, bearing in mind before we had the first practice, free practice and qualifying one on the 26th of May, we had 6 weeks of unbroken sunshine. And you know, it's Todd's law that weather changed the day before our first session. So it was a really difficult event. And if somebody said to me on the Monday, the 26th of May last year, Gary, you're going to get 9 races in, I would have probably taken that. But doing what we did and moving the schedule around, and everybody was flexible, and the comms out to the teams and riders was good. Obviously, everybody was kept informed along the way. To lose that senior race after everything we've been to was a pretty hard pill to swallow, actually, and it really did get to me quite a lot. But having said that, you know, safety is first, safety is paramount, as I've said earlier. And you know, we're not going to put riders out in unfavorable conditions. The issue with that night was obviously they've been qualifying and practicing in conditions and racing in quite windy conditions throughout the fortnight, but that particular afternoon, evening, the wind had changed direction, so they was completely unaware of that. We did have they went out on the sighting lap, they came back in. I had a meeting with quite a lot of them, actually, and there was only from memory, and obviously I'm not going to give names, but from memory there was only probably one or two who were keen to race. The majority, in fact, the rest of them were not keen at all. So obviously it's me who makes the final decision. I listened to what they had to say. I went back up to race control, and really and truly, it was a non-starter. I think, and obviously I come under a lot of criticism for that from various quarters, as I invariably do and have done. But had we put them out and had something happened, I dare say the same people criticising me would have been then saying, why did he put them out? Why did they start the race? So I'm in that situation where you can't win, but which doesn't bother me, but it's the safety of the riders which is of paramount importance.
And on a more general note, this year, 2026, marks the fourth year of this expanded 10-race programme. Now, when it first came in 2023, the Isle of Man was absolutely blessed with, I think, near-perfect weather to allow everything to go ahead. But the last 2 years, 24 and 25, there's had to be a lot of chopping and changing, largely because of conditions and maybe some other factors as well. Certain things are beyond your control. But how much do you understand maybe some of the sceptics out there that still say that this schedule is too crowded, you're trying to fit too much in?
I see it on social media and that, but we have made some schedule changes for this year. So for example, we start on 25th of May, Monday the 25th of May, the Bank Holiday Monday, which is a free practice followed by qualifying one, Q1. So it's a morning and afternoon session on the Monday. Qualifying two is on Tuesday evening. And then this year we're going Wednesday afternoon and Wednesday evening. So Qualifying three will be Wednesday afternoon. Qualifying four will be Wednesday evening. We've then got a rest day. I mean, obviously, last year the thing we have taken on board from officials, riders, teams, etc., is that everybody, you know, it's a long 2 weeks, so everybody does get tired. So, and obviously we're well aware of that. So Thursday this year, all being equal, Thursday is a rest day, a contingency day. We're going this year. We're going on Friday morning as well as Friday afternoon for the final qualifying session. So we've got Q5 on the Friday morning, an additional qualifying session this year. So we go from 5 qualifying sessions to 6 qualifying sessions, and the final qualifying session will be on the Friday afternoon. We've already spoke to riders and teams, and you know there is a. And I'm not going to say what the number is, but in my own head, and after discussions with the riders and teams, you know, that everybody's generally happy with a number of laps they do in qualifying week, which they'll be happy with to go racing on the, so we can start racing on Saturday. So I've kind of got that in my mind, and provided everybody's achieved those number of qualifying laps, then we will be starting racing on the Saturday. If you remember last year, we kind of, obviously because of the weather in qualifying week, we moved, we had more qualifying on the Saturday, we have Sunday afternoon, we started racing finally on the Monday. And it really did back up the programme in race week. So we're trying to avoid that. There are the same number of contingency sessions as we had before. There's not a great deal of change really in that to what it was when it was a Friday senior race day. So all I can say is that we will do what we can. What we are keen of is that people get rest. So we brought in this Thursday rest day in qualifying week. Obviously, Monday is a contingency of race week in race week, as is the Thursday. So, you know, we will, as we have done, we will always get those races in as much as we can. But again, you know, we're not going to put riders out in unfavourable conditions, and people need to be mindful of that.
And when it comes to the schedule outside of your remit on the on what happens on the course, of course, you've got the residents around the island as well. Like you say, you've got more contingencies and more qualifying sessions more generally as well. Things can change. There are plenty of residents that support the TT. Some maybe don't. Some maybe see it as an inconvenience to their day. So how have you tried to argue it to maybe those on the resident side of things who don't follow the TT but may just see it as more road closures and more changes to their schedules?
Yeah, obviously, in any sport, in any walk of life, there are going to be people who love the event, who love events, and those that don't. But you know, that God, the Ironman TT races, it is a global event. It is one of the biggest, probably if not the biggest, motorsport event in the world. You know, hugely popular. And what it does for the Ironman, it puts the Ironman on the map. You know, it's, everybody knows the Ironman for the TT. So all I would say to the people the residents and people on the course who don't like it is that, you know, I've been doing this job now for 14 years. This is my 14th year in the job. You know, I'm well aware of the inconvenience that it brings to people, especially when we put in delays to qualifying and racing. But we do absolutely everything we can to make those decisions. Or I make those decisions as early in the day as I possibly can to minimise disruption to the public, the officials, the riders and teams. And all I'm going to do is encourage anybody to get the Ironman TT Races.com, the TT info line. So there's a TT info line on the website, and they can also get that TT info line via WhatsApp. And it gives everybody the up-to-date latest changes, the updates and schedules, everything. And I would strongly recommend everybody to download that to the phones or look at it on the website. It's a fantastic info line, gives all the updated information. But going back to what you said about the residents who don't like the TT, I'm aware of that, and I will do what I possibly can to minimise any disruptions throughout the 2 weeks that we've got coming up.
On a completely different note as well, of course, this year we've got Amazon MGM Studios coming over to the Isle of Man throughout the event, filming for a potential upcoming feature film in the future, as it were. So from the clerk of the course's perspective, how are you going to manage both keeping the event going as it normally would and also taking into account that there are other activities that will be happening out on course throughout the 2 weeks?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, well aware of the filming that's going to be taking place. And through the department, we've been working closely with the producers. What I can say on that is that the filming, and obviously there has to be some filming take place on the start line and around the assembly and everything. But, you know, despite what some people do and have said again, I can confirm that the filming that is taking place will have absolutely no impact on the race schedule whatsoever. The film producers know that, you know, those who are doing the film know that, they know the racing takes precedence. Obviously, that's what we're going across for. And the schedule has been planned accordingly for the filming, so that has no impact on the race schedule whatsoever. So personally, I think it's brilliant. It's a brilliant thing. It's going to, again, it's going to take the Ironman TT races to a further global audience. I mean, look what it did to the Formula One a couple of years ago, well, last year. So, you know, to give that exposure to the Ironman and to the TT can only be a good and positive thing. But we are working closely with the producers. And as I say, the main thing is there is no impact on the race schedule itself.
Just a couple more questions. One on a rather serious note, and this is very much in the minority. The vast majority of supporters of the TT spectators are extremely respectful of these. But unfortunately, we saw it last year and we have seen previously. There are those who maybe stray onto closed roads when they shouldn't. We've heard situations where drones might be flying over the course, which is, of course, illegal to do so. I mean, how much do you have to emphasise each year just how crucial it is that people follow the rules around drones, around closed roads and everything else for that matter, for everyone's safety, and also the quite harsh penalties that come to those who do flout the rules intentionally or unintentionally?
Yeah, thanks for asking that question. It's again, it all comes down to the safety. From my point of view, you know, it is the safety of competitors and the officials and spectators around the course. And if any spectator, and I cannot emphasize this enough, if any spectator, member of the public, is caught or walking or accessing the TT course during periods of road closure or flying a drone adjacent to the course, they will be locked up. It's as simple as that. I cannot put that any plainer. You know, we have the senior police officer or a senior police officer working with us in race control. And as soon as the marshals radio through to race control and identify someone on the course or someone flying a drone, the SPO, the senior police officer, very quickly dispatches a police unit to that location. And the offenders will be arrested and locked up. It's as simple as that. And I can't put that any plainer. But there will be severe penalties imposed if they're caught on the course or flying a drone.
And on a different note, marshals, of course, remaining vital to any sessions going ahead. I mean, from maybe the conversations you've had with the Marshals Association, how are numbers looking this year? And how, I suppose, well spread out are they across sessions? Because, of course, the Marshals Association, they've told us in the past that, you know, certain sessions are almost oversubscribed in some ways, but some, they really do need a bit of help on the numbers sometimes.
Yeah, I have to say, I mean, I'm in daily contact with the TTMA, and Andy Williams, who works in the TTMA, sends out a regular update, daily update as to where we are. And very pleasingly this year, the marshal numbers are certainly on par with last year. And all I can do is encourage those who want to sign up to marshal the TT course. If they haven't done already, please do so. You know, numbers are good, but obviously, you know, we welcome anybody who wants to marshal the TT course. So if you haven't signed on, please do so. But, you know, the marshalling at TT 2026 is in a good place. You know, I helped deliver one of the IMC courses in Rugby in January. All the marshals, very, very enthusiastic, good turnout. And, yeah, the Marshall Association goes from strength to strength. It's getting more professional every year. The IMCs are good, and Marshall numbers are good, and they're good for TT 2026.
And just finally, I suppose on a more optimistic note is probably the way of putting it as well. With all the disruptions we've had, particularly with weather over the last couple of years. You know, what would it mean to you as clerk of the course? Because you've had to make some difficult decisions with regards to racing and sessions generally over the last couple of years. Again, coming back to the idea that we didn't see the senior race last year. You know, from your perspective, what would it mean to see most, if not all, of the programme go ahead as scheduled and we get a decent run of weather over the 2 weeks?
That's a fantastic question. I go back to TT 2023. I think TT 2023 arrived on the island, and the first time we had a spot of rain was on the Sunday. I was getting the ferry to go back once the event had finished, and I think during that fortnight, every session went to plan almost to the minute, apart from on the Tuesday race week when we had some low cloud, fog and mist, and we had to delay the Super Twin race to the evening. But that was a fantastic event, and if we could replicate that for this year, God, that was just, especially after the 2 years we've had, 24 and 25, bad weather. I'm still, you know, unfortunately, regrettably, I'll always be known as the first class of the course in history to cancel senior race in 2012. Obviously, I had to cancel it last year, and the senior classic at the classic TT in August. So to be known as the clerk of the course to keep cancelling senior races is not something I want to continue doing. So if we can get a good 2 weeks of weather under my belt, and that I'm hardly seen or heard of, that'll do me, Rob. That'll do me just fine.
Thank you for having the stamina to make it to the end of the Manx Radio Sportscast. You're clearly someone who has their eye on the ball at all times. Want to hear more about the latest sporting news across the Isle of Man and much more? Then might I recommend you take the plunge and subscribe to this series or a wide range of Manx Radio podcasts at your favourite podcast provider, so that, in a flash, all of our finest moments take a winner's place on your smartphone. Thank you.